Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, microbrews, domestics, snacks, soft drinks. They roast their peanuts every day, and the pickle bar is second to none. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Very sad moment today. Kevin had to turn in the manly Ford F-150, and now he's just back to being himself.
Yeah, I did. I had to turn in the F-150 Lariat. It is now available for your test drive tomorrow. Or better yet, plan up for the next tailgate. For your next tailgate opportunity, make sure you have an F-150 ready to go. And some of these F-150s have a pull-out step, so you could literally get up into the tailgate a lot easier and literally tailgate all day long. Plenty of room in that,
Sunbury
too.
Motors. Yep. Yeah. It's an awesome vehicle. Again, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. You know, last night the Seahawks won big. They beat Green Bay. Tonight's high school football. Tomorrow, full day of college football, including Penn State in action with Akron at noon. 94 team. 5 o'clock. I'm going to go talk to several members of the 94 team as well, which I'm looking forward to very much. And you then have in the NFL on Sunday, including the Steelers and the Browns, and Monday Night Football has two games coming up. So football dominates at this particular point. And I know, Kevin, you are juiced for the official debut of Johnny Manziel.
I don't think he's going to get in the game.
Tony DeFazio, are you juiced about the debut of Johnny Manziel?
Well, the thing I'm excited about is the end of the NFL exhibition season. That's I'm not sure if it's excited, but just relieved and beat up, I guess. That's a difficult season to cover, Steve, as you well know.
Yes. What are you confident in and not confident in the Steelers going in?
That's a great question, because a couple of weeks ago I was pretty well convinced that the Steelers were in much better shape than they were one season ago, especially defensively. That changed. Frankly, I guess if you look back in hindsight now at the first, second, and even the fourth exhibition games for the Steelers, you saw holes in that first team defense. But it was the third game against the Philadelphia Eagles that really hit people, you know, broadsided. This was you try very hard not to read too much into the preseason, but it was hard not to have major concerns defensively about this team. That having been said, Steve, it's going to take a while for the pieces to all fit together. There's a lot of new pieces and a lot of young pieces on this defense. And, you know, again, looking back, Dick LeBeau defenses have traditionally not been kind to young players, to rookie players. Troy Polamalu struggled mightily his first year. We're talking about a borderline Hall of Famer now. Some would argue the borderline part of that. And again, he struggled mightily. Most first-year guys don't get on the field too much in Dick LeBeau's defense, and we're going to see a couple of those guys playing a good bit this year. So, I think, what am I not confident in? I think the defense is going to struggle early. I really do. I think even if they come together, it's going to take a while. A game, three games, a month, who knows? But I think the defense, even if things work out as well as they possibly can, we're not going to see results right away.
Yeah.
What am I confident in?
Yeah.
Steve, I think the offense is going to be fine. I really do. I think the offense is going to be fine. I think that they have made great strides under Todd Haley. I don't think they showed much this offseason. I think that was that was on purpose. I think that Ben Roethlisberger and Todd Haley are really on the same page right now. I think they're really working hand in hand. I think it took a few years for that to happen. But not only are they hand in hand, I think they have the pieces that Todd Haley needs and wants in his offense. So offensively, I think they're in pretty good shape. But that's going to change a little bit because they may have to do more than just be in good shape, at least early, to make up for what I see as major problems on defense.
Do you sense they're now comfortable and on the same page between coordinator, quarterback, and offense?
Yeah, you know, I think they are. I mean, you know, I don't know that they necessarily were ever, you know, battling. I think that was the, you know, that was sort of the storyline that may have been media created. And again, Ben Roethlisberger has never done a lot to quell talk. You know, his body language usually gives away what he feels. And he was clearly not comfortable or not as comfortable with Haley as he was with Bruce Arians. And that's understandable. He went to Super Bowls with Bruce Arians. He won Super Bowls with Bruce Arians. And, you know, when Arians, and it was a very odd transition. You know, the Steelers told us, and they told us that, you know, to our face, they told us that in black and white in a press release, and then days later, Bruce Arians has another job, the same job, but with a different NFL organization, and they bring in, you know, Todd Haley, who some see as, still see as the son of Dick Haley, longtime, you know, Chuck Noll confidant. So that was a very odd transition. That didn't help things. And they were rebuilding. You know, let's face it, they extended themselves with some veterans to try to get to a couple more Super Bowls. It didn't quite work out that way. And then they were stuck on the bad end of some of these contracts with some older players, and they went through a rebuilding process that I think everybody could have or at least should have seen coming. So I think that was a big part of the problem as well, and I think there were some growing pains, and now I think that they really are on the same page. Of course, again, I can say that. You know, let's talk again Sunday afternoon and maybe in early October to see if that really rings true.
Yeah, that's why I use the word comfort as opposed to, you know, at odds, because I never thought they were at odds. I think it just takes a while to get used to. You know, yep. Haley takes a while to get used to what really is Ben's strength and what his weaknesses are. And at the same time, you know, let's face it, I mean, Ben has to get used to what Haley's strengths and weaknesses are.
Steve, I think it's a great point about Ben. And I think, you know, he's not a traditional quarterback. And I think Ben Roethlisberger had to fight his own battle because what was great for him at 27 is no longer great for him, you know, at 31, 32 years old. And you can, you know, when you were as good and as successful as he was, you can understand how it might be hard to change your game. But to Roethlisberger's credit, he did that. And, you know, I think some off-field maturation helped Roethlisberger as well. I think it's a different Ben Roethlisberger now that we're watching play for the Steelers. And quite frankly, Steve, if it wasn't a different Ben Roethlisberger, we probably wouldn't be watching him play football anymore. That's how bad things were getting for him, as everybody knows, off the field. So I think that maturation, you know, has helped. In addition to what you said, I do think that's a pretty insightful look at things, that it took Haley a while to understand what is best for Ben Roethlisberger and how to make him the best quarterback he can be.
It's very difficult to have really anybody under the right radar when it's a 45-man roster and it's an NFL team, because people are absorbed in every part of an NFL team. But if you could pick out a couple of guys that may not be headline grabbers right now but could make contributions that are important to this team, who would that be?
I'll give you two names, one on offense, one on defense, and I'll start with the one I'm a little more confident in. That's Shamarco Thomas, second-year safety from Syracuse. Was a guy with a big hitter last year, but he was one of those young kids who, you know, while going for the big hit, would put himself out of position. And I think playing behind and watching two established veterans like Ryan Clark and Troy Polamalu helped him, you know, significantly in the offseason. And I think, honestly, he's going to be a guy who's going to push for time. He was better than Mike Mitchell in the preseason. Obviously, it's early to say get Mitchell out of there yet. The guy hasn't even played a game that counts yet. But I think the Steelers, if they're going to have, you know, Shamarco Thomas may be the kind of player who gives the Steelers fits trying to get him on the field, because he was very, very strong, not only against the run but also in pass coverage. And I think he's a lot smarter and just a lot more mature player now in his second season than he was in his first. So he's a guy that I would put a notch on first. And then I'll sort of pull a name here, Darius Heyward-Bey, the guy who really is probably getting one of his, you know, maybe a last chance in the NFL after playing and having a very difficult time for the Raiders. Wasn't his fault he was drafted too early, but he certainly was. Yeah. Struggled with the Raiders, had a very poor season last year with the Colts, and then started out with a concussion very early in practice, and it looked like he wasn't going to make this team. Came on very, very strong late, and because Martavis Bryant is still young, he's their fourth-round draft pick, because Lance Moore has been banged up, Darius Hayward Bay may get a chance. He really made the team because of his special teams contributions, which surprised a lot of people. And I think he put himself in a position to maybe get some playing time with the regular offense.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Talking about the Steelers, Kevin's beloved group. After Merrill Reese yesterday, Tony on today in a point-counterpoint segment. We'll come back. Tioka Jackson on BTN and what he saw the potential of the 94 team as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
All right, 1994 team will be here tomorrow. In fact, I'm going to be with them at about 45 minutes to sit down and talk with them. Kajana Carter's here. Mike Archie will be here. Kyle Brady, Kerry Collins. They're all here. I mean, it's a long, long list. I saw the list of all the players that are back. Very impressive. Now, a guy that's with BTN now is Tioka Jackson. He actually got out after the 93 season, and Ty joins us quickly. I only have a couple minutes, Ty, but when you finished up the Citrus Bowl against Tennessee, which was a signature win, and I felt one that was a jumping point for Penn State to set up 94, did you get that sense that they were going to be that good?
All of the young guys offensively were going to be dynamite. You know, that whole cast of characters. And, you know, it now, as we look back, reads like a who's who of all-time great Penn State football players, and Kerry Collins and Andre Johnson. And you know, just the list goes on and on in terms of the great talent they had, first-round draft picks, Jonna Carter and Kyle Brady. I knew they were all going to be really good. My concern was how good was the defense going to be. Right. I didn't know they would be historically great and probably one of the better offensive football teams in the history of college football, and I think that's kind of what helped them. They were good on defense, but they weren't really dominant. And we had four pros on that defense the year before, and so I was a little concerned about defensively. But as it turned out, they needed some defense. But that offense was so unbelievably explosive, and it could play in so many different a variety of ways in terms of ball control. They could score quickly. They could grind you. They could pound you. They could possess the football. It turned out to be a historically great offense. So defensively, they were fine. They were good enough.
As you watch from afar, because you were one of the four NFL players off that team, as you watch from afar, what did you think?
Well, I stuck my chest out, first of all, because, I mean, I'm like, you know, hey, I'm a Penn State guy. I made it easy to wear my Penn State slippers and my hat. I was going to wear it either way, but it made it real easy. So I was popular in the locker room. I was in Atlanta then, and certainly everybody wanted to talk about this guy, Kajana Carter, and how good he was. But what jumped out to me was Kerry. You know, that step he took, Kerry Collins, he really became a great, great quarterback. And I think, you know, with that season, he had cemented himself at the top of the list in terms of historically. But that's really what jumped out at me, his maturation and his command of the entire team, really. That I was. It was really great to see, because if you recall the early part of his career, he was in a battle with John Sacca and trying to find his way, and that thing kind of sorted itself out with John transferring, and he kind of got a hold of that thing his junior year. But wow, that last year he became historic.
How did Penn State set you up? I mean, you played in the NFL. What were some things in the NFL that you knew, because of your experience at Penn State, you were going to be in good shape, not only in the league but also in life?
Well, that's a great question. You know, hard work. I wasn't a stranger to hard work. That was something that, you know, as an undrafted free agent, you got to find a way to create a niche and separate yourself from these guys who were drafted and paid millions of dollars in some cases on a signing bonus just to come in and start their career. And so I had to find a way to separate myself, and hard work became a real easy difference maker for me, just because I was used to the type of work it took to be really, really good. And it was amazing to me how many talented players coming from what we thought were really good programs just really weren't hard workers. It was really surprising me. So that was one. And then two, taking real criticism. A lot of players can't take criticism and as they get older and get into the National Football League. And you wonder why so many great players in college don't make it in the NFL, and there are about, you know, 20 different reasons, but one of them is the ability to be coached up hard and criticized for their play. Some of these players weren't used to that, and I got it from one of the best ever in Joe Paterno, and so mentally I was strong enough to deal with what I had to deal with in terms of being criticized, maybe not getting a fair shake as an undrafted free agent. I led the team in sacks in preseason my rookie year and still got cut, having to deal with that mental aspect and having to really assess myself, learning to really be honest with myself and criticize myself and learn I had to get better. Those are traits that are invaluable, and I would say to you, Steve, help me in life today.
Right. Ty, everyone thinks, hey, you go to TV, BTN, whatever. Hey, it's easy. Anybody can do that. What's been the toughest transition on TV?
Trying to look handsome. That's hard for me, man.
Cut me a break.
Radio, man. You and I are similar in that one, right?
I specialized in that. You know that, Ty.
Right. You know what? And honestly, the toughest thing for me, and this is going to come no surprise to you because you've known me for a while, but learning to be concise. I mean, as you listeners right now are hearing me ramble on, and you can do that a little bit in radio, but in television, you know, things, you have to hit your marks and things are tight. You got tight blocks, and you especially when you're sharing the camera time with other people. And in most cases, I'm on with two other guys, and I got to be fair. And so that's something I'm learning to do. And as you can hear, I'm still struggling with it, but I'm going to get better.
No, we're on radio now, so you did great. It's like the hearing you. Thanks for carving out a few minutes for us today. We really appreciate it, and I think you're doing a great job with them.
Well, I really appreciate it, and I look forward to this home opening tomorrow. It's going to be a really good day for the guys in blue.
All right, Tyoka Jackson. There are very few pass rushers at Penn State as good as that guy off the edge. Played with Tampa Bay, played with Atlanta in the NFL. Now he's with BTN. And our thanks to him for carving out a couple of minutes for us there, which was nice. And also to Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, for talking about the Steelers from a reporter's point of view as opposed to a fan's point of view.
What are you trying to say?
Well,
what's your point?
Well, I liked his comments about Ben Roethlisberger maturing because Kevin, what a party guy.
Oh, boy. Hey, by the way, there is a rain delay in Chicago right now. They're in the bottom of the fifth, delayed due to rain. Pittsburgh leading the Cubbies 3-2 right now.
Well, the way the Pirates have been playing, that's going to be about a 5-3 lead for the Cubs in a couple winnings.
And you talk about me being negative.
Man, well, I've just been had my heart broken by the Pirates the last week. Again, that Cardinals series? Ouch. So...
Cardinals might be better.
Yeah. There's a sentiment, a school of thought that says that.
Yeah. All right.
But, hey, no, Tyoka Jackson, articulate, bright, successful, gee.
Yeah. You know, I thought it was a great pickup by BTN to get him on for all the reasons that you talked about. He has a lot of personality, and I hope they allow him to let that personality show out. We're going to get...
We're working on Dave Refson for next week. Dave not only is the host of BTN and the signature of BTN on the air, but he also wrote a book about the history of college football. And you know what he found out about the history of college football? That life in the 1880s and 1890s, in terms of how the game was approached and how people approach winning and losing, is no different than today.
Ah.
No different.
Well,
some of the stories are the same, and that you'd be shocked to find out that some of the stories are the same. And that's when you read his book, you're like, really? I mean, you could be writing it in 2014.
You know, that's just one of those things where somebody had to do a lot of research to be able to pull that stuff out from 120 years ago and say, hey.
Dave did.
Yeah.
Dave did, using articles and things like that, because obviously people played back then. No one's alive.
Not a lot of people to interview from that era, that's for sure.
No, really can't. Let me check the radar here for you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Well, it doesn't matter. Worried about tonight.
Well, it doesn't matter now. At 4:30, everybody's playing at this point.
Yeah, but what's the lightning rule?
30 minutes from the last strike. So, and it will reset after every lightning strike.
Okay.
Well, hold on here. Let me look here. I actually have a lightning detector on my phone.
What, do you have and to hold it, says, it in the air, and if it gets struck by lightning, you know there's a storm nearby?
That's because
no,
he's
called,
up
it's called it, it tells you how close the closest lightning strike happens to be.
Uh-huh.
And right now, the closest lightning strike at the moment is 85 miles away. And it's actually 85 miles to the southeast. It's down in York. It's not near us at all.
Beautiful.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury's the beverage supermarket. Ah, yes. Imports, domestics, microbrews, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts every day. And, of course, the pickle bar, which is second to none. Yeah. Kevin had to turn in his F-150 today. Thus, Dick Hort takes over the manly spot in the broadcast booth tonight.
He's got an F-150 of his own, so he's been manly.
That's
long
my
before
point.
Me. Yeah.
That's my point.
He's been manly long before me.
So have they told you what you're getting next?
Yes. It is a Lincoln MXS, I believe.
Oh, Lincoln.
Or MKS. I'm sorry. Lincoln MKS is what we'll be talking about next week.
My goodness, man. Wow.
Yep. We'll be looking at that one next week and talking a little bit about some of the features that are available there in the Lincoln dealership, which is in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury.
Wow. Love it.
Good news, though, and you look the hour-by-hour forecast for Sunbury. There is a potential of a thunderstorm at 6. Then we are clean, clear till after 9 o'clock.
Nice. Good. Game kicks at 7, everybody.
If you don't hear me at 6:30, you know there's a thunderstorm.
Coward.
No, it's not really by choice. I would be fine. Listen... I
Bob,
would broadcast in a hurricane if I knew I could.
Bob,
I think Bob left for Danville, Mifflinburg.
I don't blame him. You're a coward.
No. My wife always laughs because we go to the beach and she goes, I know what you're looking for. You're looking to see if there's going to be a hurricane so you could sit out on the balcony and report. She goes, Jim Cantore, you're not.
Yes. Yeah, Cantore sits out in the darndest things. So that's tonight. That's high school football tonight. We're looking forward to it very much. Four games on the Sunbury Broadcasting family of stations tonight. So a big night on tap. Tomorrow, they're talking about maybe a shower at 10 and maybe a shower at 3 at Beaver Stadium. It's a noon kickoff. And, of course, Bucknell's at Marist and Eagle 107 has that tomorrow evening at 6:00. The Spikes actually won last night.
You sound surprised.
No, no, I'm not, because of who pitched. The Anderson kid, I expected to pitch a great game. He retired the first 17 batters he faced. He had a perfect game into the sixth inning. And they won 3-0. So they go tonight in the third and deciding game if they win their home Sunday night.
That was one busy Thursday for you, my friend Steve.
They're all busy, Bob.
I know they are, but there's busy, and then there's real busy.
After I'm done with this show today,
yes,
I will then go to practice because I am to sit down and interview members of the 1994 team for television. And then I have to be at the ballpark at 6, and I'm on the air at 6:35 to do the Spikes' third and deciding game tonight. So it's another normal day for me.
Yes. Well, yesterday I know it was busy as well because you did the radio show from Damon's, which was a fun-packed hour with the Energizer Bunny, Coach James Franklin. Then you left and went and did the ball game at Lubrano Park for the Spikes.
Yeah.
Wow. And did a bit of radio.
Last night's game.
Yes.
But get this, last night's game, an hour and 56 minutes.
Man, you got home a little early then.
I mean, shocking. An hour and 56, nine-inning game.
Who was the pitcher for St. Louis back in the day that would do the same? Bob Gibson. Bang, bang, bang. Yeah, back in the 60s and 70s. He would throw a nine-inning game and be under 2 hours.
Yeah. Look, you don't mess around, you get the ball and throw it. Now, it helps a lot of times when pitchers slow down, it is because they're runners on base.
Sure.
Any pitcher does that, I understand that. Well, the kid retired the first 17 batters he faced. Okay? And when you're doing that, you're just taking the ball, pitch, 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 pitch. The game flies. And they won 3-0 last night.
And they are playing for, is it the Nipen League Championship?
Semifinals. If they win tonight, they go to the championship series. Tri-City, which is up in Troy, New York. The Astros affiliate's already in the final.
Okay.
Steve, I have a question for you in week two here. There's been a lot of discussion as far as college football on Michigan State and Oregon and what this particular game means as far as where the Big Ten sits in prestige and where it sits in you know, quality football against a decent Pac-12 team. Is that just a lot of hype, or is there some truth to that this may go a long way in solidifying the Big Ten here in this new era of football that we're living in?
Well, here's the issue, Kevin. The issue is this. The Big Ten in the last few years has not done a great job of distinguishing itself in non-conference play in big games and bowl games. That's the reason why. That's a huge part of it. And because they haven't, I mean, that's why, for example, Penn State's won like 14 bowl games since they entered the conference. Well, they by far have more bowl wins than anybody else. Not even close. You know, Ohio State's not even in the same ballpark. Michigan's not in the same ballpark in terms of the ability to win big intersectional games. And Penn State's been the one school that's been able to consistently do it. That's why you look at the Wisconsin game last week when they played LSU. They're winning the game 21-3, and they lost. They lost 28-24. And that was a big blow for the conference that in Houston, they had it won, and they didn't win it. Well, now Michigan State has to go out and they have to play at Oregon. Well, it's a huge intersectional game, and the Big Ten has taken a lot of hits in terms of its lack of success at intersectional games, especially against the Southeastern Conference. Well, now they've got, of course, the Pac-12 that they're going head-to-head with in this one. But that's the issue. I mean, pure and simple.
And you know, I hear a lot about this particular game, and instead of it being a game, it's between two teams. It's almost a game in which somebody's going to have to justify their conference. That's the way it's being billed, though.
No, it's a little bit more than that. This is a big game in terms of the ability to with the Final Four. You have to think of these games like a game like this one, that it's a Final Four kind of game. The winner is still very much in the hunt for the Final Four, and on week two, the other one's going to have to battle its way back.
Well, there's the other thing I was going to ask. If you lose this game and it's a close game, does it hurt you as much as it would losing a game that maybe doesn't have the strength of schedule numbers that this one does? Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, but here's the difference. The winner, if you lose, for example, if you're Michigan State and you lose to, Western Michigan,
right,
or if you lose to Vanderbilt.
A game you quote-unquote should win.
Yeah, right, you've been dealt a huge blow and that knocks you way down. In a game like this, it's not just that you have to now battle your way back, but the team that wins it actually now has really propped up its resume. That's the big difference between, Vanderbilt or Western Michigan beating you as opposed to Oregon beating you. If Oregon wins the game, they're now put themselves on a track where they are deeply in the conversation as to who is going to be in the Final Four. They're going to put themselves in a position where they're talked about in that vein for weeks to come.
But I also think this actually helps the team by playing this game now as opposed to playing it later. Even, say, in a week four or even a week five, this has to be a big plus to the team that loses because they still have time to get talked about in that Final Four scenario, even though they're losing this game early in week two.
It's called redemption. They get a chance to redeem themselves.
Up to a point, Kevin, I agree with you. But... it still means that you'll get knocked down several pegs. Now, you're not going to get knocked out of the top 20. That's not going to happen. Okay? But where you're going to get knocked down a few pegs is now there'll be teams in front of you that you now have to leapfrog and hope that lose to put yourself back in that spot again.
You know, if this is a 10-point game...
You no longer control your own destiny. How about that?
Right. But if this is a 10-point game, I think the loser still has some hope in the rest of the season. If this is a 21 or more point differential game, that may not be helpful in even later on in the season if you can redeem yourself.
Steve,
right.
Did you just say, Kevin, I agree with you? Is that what I heard?
I wasn't sure either. I thought I better check the tape.
I had to go see my cardiologist after you uttered that. I was just wondering.
I agree with him.
Yeah, Kevin's now trying to get it on the tape, so that he can play that back.
That's going to be a promo for months.
Yeah, I hear you. Be careful,
Steve, when you start saying things like that. It can come back.
Yes, I can hear it on the promos now, but it's true.
Steve, here's something. Oh, go ahead, Bob.
Steve, some people have called the Penn State Akron game or made comments about worrying about an ambush game. What's your take on that?
Look, Penn State's gone through the last 2 years where every game, it means a lot to them because of, there's no bowl game, there's nothing, So you have to take advantage of each opportunity. So I don't think Penn State's been involved in any, quote, trap games, nor do I think they're involved in a trap game now. I mean, part of it, too, is you are playing in James Franklin's first game as the head coach at home. There's some motivation about it. But I think when you've developed a mentality like they've had to develop a mentality, I think that changes in the end what you're doing in terms of how you approach things. They haven't been involved in, quote, a trap game anywhere along the line because they've kind of felt it's us against the world and that every game actually had meaning. And I give Bill O'Brien a lot of credit for that. He instilled that in them. And it still continues today, and I think that's a big plus. I don't view that as a trap game or anything like that because I just think that they've done a good job of understanding exactly where they are and that each game is a bowl game to them.
And, Steve, that allows me to segue into something else that's kind of behind the scenes. It's that elephant in the room that people are kind of talking about but not directly, and that is the so-called Mitchell report. It's supposed to be done about any day now because it's been just about a year ago that the first year. Go ahead.
Right, I believe, Bob, it's coming out Monday.
And what I read this morning about the Mitchell report from last year was that before it became public by Senator Mitchell as the monitor of Penn State athletics and institutional correctness, et cetera, is that it was shared with Penn State legal counsel. It was shared with Big Ten legal counsel. It was shared with the NCAA legal counsel. So they knew in advance what it would say and would be prepared. So my sense is that it's kind of been out there, but there are rooms full of lawyers looking at it for meaning and implications and for drafting statements about what may or may not come, say, Monday. So
I'm just going to sit back like everybody else, wait for it, take a look at it, and then, you know, the most important part to me will be the part about recommendations of what they do or don't do. I mean, that's the entire part to me that I'm going to be looking at.
And we know what
We
know what the Mitchell report is going to say, I think, which is, here is the list of things that Penn State was told they had to do. Here's the checklist, and they've checked off almost all the blocks. Thank you very much. The real question, as you stated, is, what are the consequences of doing it right? What are the consequences of following the path that they were told to follow? What is the reward for doing what was expected of them in stellar fashion, I might add? I mean, I think we know what the report will say.
I'm pretty confident the report will be pretty clean. I mean, in terms of implementation of the free report recommendations and so forth, but after that, I'm not going to hazard any guess. I just don't know anymore. I just don't know. I mean, to me, the NCAA talks repeatedly over and over again about the student-athlete and so forth. And these student-athletes and the people around them, I think, have done, I think, virtually everything you can ask them to do. If they hold to their word, for example, that they're about the student-athlete, then I would expect a positive result. If they don't, then there won't be. I'm just going to have to take, at this point, really a conservative viewpoint about it, because you just don't know how dug in people are right now, and that's a big part. How dug in is everybody at this point? Now, for the NCAA, there are going to be 3 more bowl games this year. They do need 6 more participants, you know, so there's some logic to that. Even though it doesn't affect the Big Ten, it's still a domino effect. You still have to have, 76 teams?
With at least a six and six.
Right, and that's a small margin of error for the NCAA, and I don't know if that comes into play or not. I just don't know. But I'm just throwing that out there so that people know that that's also a part of what's going on. You know, scholarship givebacks. Penn State right now would be scheduled to get 25 scholarships again in February, and they would then get 80 scholarships on the team for next year. That's where they stand. Right, we'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, tomorrow, Penn State Akron. Tonight, though, big high school football matchup, Jersey Shore and Shikellamy. Shikellamy's home opener coming up tonight. Looking forward to that. Kevin and the coach, Dick Hort, will have that this evening.
I'll be making my way just a little bit over the river, not quite through the... Well, I will go through the woods to get to the river and then over to Sunbury.
Good. Good.
So I guess it is technically over the river and through the woods.
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact. Yes, it is. But it should be a good game tonight. It's a good win for Shikellamy last week to open the season like that. Really good.
These are two teams that actually had 63 plays. That's a lot of high school football plays. You can see that they both play up-tempo.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot, especially when you consider it's a 48-minute game. So
that's right.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And the Levi Lorson for the tailback for Jersey Shore averages 10 yards a carry a week ago against Belfont.
Wow. That's a great win for them. Well, that's tonight. That's at 7.
Real quick before we wrap up, this coming from the Philadelphia Inquirer. It looks like the Phillies may be looking to move Dominic Brown with the stellar play of Grady Sizemore. He's been getting a lot more playing time over Brown.
That's your guy.
Ben Revere, Marlon Byrd, the club's two other regular outfielders, make Dominic Brown available to other teams. They cannot do anything as far as a minor league option because he has no options left. And if they send him down, he won't clear waivers, and he'd get claimed quickly.
Exactly.
So they're going to try and see what they can do with him over the next couple of months, I would imagine.
Right, exactly. So that's the Phillies front right there. Look, it's moving Dominic Brown is not the big issue here. They've got
That's small
the first
potatoes.
Of many steps, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, though, Steve, a year and a half ago, we were in the same situation talking about maybe moving Dominic Brown, and I was freaking out over it. Right now, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, yes. I can understand that, but that's not... You know, he has not adjusted for whatever reason. His ability to adjust has not been, and that's the biggest issue with him. He just has not been able to adjust.
He goes from all-star caliber year to barely showing up year.
Is this another one of those moments where Steve says to Kevin, "Kevin, I agree with you." Is that if I get this right? Boy,
if they trade him, I mean, but they've got to get something for him.
Yeah.
I'll tell you right now, though, I don't trade him and get minor league prospects. No. I've got to do something more than that. I'm not big on the minor league prospect thing. I'm not.
No,
a lot of
and
risk.
I think that the Lester Cespedes trade is a perfect example of that. You get value for value.
Steve, have a great game tomorrow versus the Zips of Akron. I'll stop by, say hello at the Bryce Jordan Center before kickoff.
And I'll be listening on my way to Poughkeepsie tomorrow.
Yep. Marist and Bucknell tomorrow. Just over the Hudson.
Yes, and we can talk about it all. Talk it all on Monday.
Monday, looking forward to it. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.